evening and welcome to Outsources. I'm your host, Karen Rayforth, and with me in the studio tonight is Marlon Reese. Marlon's a fiction writer and Halloween enthusiast. That's kind of an understatement. I'd call him a Halloween czar. He was born and raised in Boulder, but now spends his time between his hometown and Washington, D.C., where his partner serves in the U.S. House of Representatives. His interests include romantic era literature and poetry, which you're going to hear some tonight, animal rights and welfare issues, and anything that goes bump in the night. I think this is going to be an interesting night. It's Halloween, and you are my Halloween expert. Tell the listeners, why has Halloween been so important to you?
The way that I approach Halloween, you mentioned that I'm a fiction writer. The arts are very important to me. Halloween is, and has always been for me, an opportunity for artistic expression and a chance to escape some of the more stifling roles that I have to play as the partner of a congressman in Washington. In a sense, I wait for this all year long. I anticipate it. It's exciting. I approach it sort of as if I'm writing a story. I get to play a different character, and I hope, you know, for my friends and the people that I celebrate with it, I bring that out in them as well. Now that I'm a father, I have two children, 1 5 and 1 2. I've really been able to see how our culture gives license to children to celebrate and to be free to celebrate and get very excited and enthusiastic. But for adults, we just aren't afforded those opportunities. And much of the time, we have to play a role in our life. It might not necessarily be who we really are. So Halloween is like a big permission slip. Everybody signs and says, tonight you can be whoever you want to be. You can be yourself, dress up, surprise people, or don't dress up at all, but come out and have some fun.
Yes, it gives us some permission this time of year. I walked into the studio today and I had on my cat mask and some whiskers and I got a few double takes, and it brings a smile to other adults' faces.
It does. It almost answers a need, I think, that adults still feel even after they've finished with their childhoods. They're longing to break out. There aren't many times during the year when it's actually traditional to be untraditional. So Halloween is that. That's what it represents to me.
I am the one hiding under your bed, teeth ground sharp and eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs, fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
Where did Halloween even come from?
It's a very interesting, very complicated history that goes back over 1,000 years. A few years ago, I had the opportunity to visit Ireland, beautiful country with wonderful folklore traditions. They had a harvest festival in ancient Celtic times, and it began at sunset on October 31st and then went until sunset on November 1st. And it was considered a liminal time, which meant that it was a period of time when the door would open between what they called the other world and the world of the living. In general, it was festive. It signaled the second half of the year when light would be waning. And it also became important for people to dress up. They called it guising. We can now call it dressing up, disguising ourselves, getting into costume. But they would do this with the express purpose of trying to conceal themselves because they believed that spirits from the other world may bring down some sort of judgment or be mischief makers in their lives or in some way throw things awry for people. So modern day people in Ireland still, they're skeptical. They won't necessarily say, I believe in magic, I believe in fairies, and at the same time, they still honor these traditions.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Like trick or treat.
Trick or treat. They don't want to make a mistake, mm-hmm. just in case it's true. People really, they did fear that if they somehow offended fairies, that a fairy might come in the night and steal your baby and mm-hmm. and leave a changeling in its place. Parents would wake up in the morning, their pantry would be bare, and their child would be gone. So there were two sides to it. Mm-hmm. You could be on the good side of the fairies or the bad side, but they very much believed that it was a time to be wary.
We think of witches as there's good witches and bad witches.
Absolutely.
More than fairies. We seem to think of fairies as good, but could be either way, although more people think of witches as bad. But there's a lot of Wiccan tradition that says they do many, many good things.
In the Wiccan tradition, they still observe this harvest tradition. And for them, it's a very solemn occasion. And it's a time to reflect and be aware that there might be other creatures stalking among us and we might not know, to try and be on their good side. We have trick-or-treating, kids going to doors, adults maybe going to doors if you're having a real Halloween. And in ancient Celtic times, part of the tradition was going from door to door and receiving gifts of food and drink and sort of a sense of hospitality. A lot of these traditions have morphed through the years, mm-hmm. but they continue into the present day, and I like that.
November 1st is the Day of the Dead and honoring ancestors, and they seem to slide together in an oh-so-appropriate way.
That actually is also a part of this this ancient Celtic festival. Because while the door opened and, you know, various supernatural creatures were able to cross over, it was also a time to commune with dearly departed. And that's where this element of hospitality came from, going door to door, offering gifts, food, drink, setting places at the table for family members that you've lost, friends that you've lost.
Almost the trick-or-treat piece around then moving into more the hospitality and where some cultures go to the cemetery and bring food and basically party with departed and dearly loved ancestors fits.
I never knew if I was strange in the sense that I was never frightened of that aspect. I enjoyed it. I thought it was exciting that there might be something else out there that I could sort of let my imagination run wild and really believe, you know, that there was more than meets the eye. And also, on a personal level, you know, we've all lost people that we love, animals that we love. I'm a big animal lover. The idea that there would be a moment during the year when you could get back in touch, you know, perhaps that's comforting to me in a way.
I noticed in Hawaii in some places that all the adults sat out on their carports, and it's just like you went from one party to another. Rather than just the kids trick-or-treating with their bag and grabbing their candy and running, it was a very different feel.
So much more formalized now. It's almost like a checklist. Kids go out trick-or-treating, they get dressed up, the adults stand back and send the kids to the door. I happen to live in a building where kids are not able to come into my building, and I would love it if they did. Now I'm finally getting the opportunity to go out and take my kids trick-or-treating.
I think that's sometimes what the adult part morphs into is mom or dad or somebody gets to take the kids out. I know that was a tradition in my family. Only when we came back to the curb, my dad always wanted to see what we got in case he had to take his commission at that moment.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly like my partner's family. he actually sold his candy when he was a kid. So he was a smart businessman, even from an early age.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I know. Little known fact.
A little known fact. That is hilarious. Well, there's so many different ways to approaching Halloween.
Yes.
What are some of the ways you've celebrated?
So this is, this might come as a bit of a surprise. Growing up, my parents did not make Halloween a tradition, really, in our household. I can remember maybe two or three times I went out trick-or-treating. And then when I was about 22, I was invited to a Halloween party with my partner, and it sort of set something off in me. I felt, I guess I would say I felt almost more at home, like I had found a holiday that truly resonated with me on multiple levels. So for me, celebrating Halloween became a very big deal after that year, and planning my costume, but also planning how I could involve the adults that I saw around me, my friends, who I noticed were not celebrating and were not having fun and almost looked towards Halloween as a chore. I have to do this for my kid. You know, we have to decorate the house, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I wanted to bring that sense of wonderment to grown-ups.
You have brought a poem for us to listen to. It sounds like that poem guided the very next stage of the development.
Yes.
And how you expanded that notion of Halloween for you and then extending to your friends. Let's listen to that.
I would love to.
The prince had provided all the appliances of pleasure. There were buffoons, there were improvisatori, there were ballet dancers, there were musicians, there was beauty, there was wine. All these and security were within. The tastes of the Duke were peculiar. He had a fine eye for colors and effects. He disregarded the decorum of mere fashion. His plans were bold and fiery, and his conception glowed with barbaric luster. There are some who would have thought him mad. His followers felt that he was not. It was necessary to hear and see and touch him, to be sure that he was not. He had directed in great parts the movable embellishments of the seven chambers upon occasion of this great fete. And it was his own guiding taste which had given character to the masqueraders. Be sure they were grotesque. There were much glare and glitter and piquancy and phantasm, much of what has been seen since in Hermione. There were arabesque figures with unsuited limbs and appointments. There were delirious fancies such as the madman fashions. There were much of the beautiful, much of the wanton, much of the bizarre, something of the terrible, and not a little of that which might have excited disgust. To and fro in the seven chambers there stalked, in fact, a multitude of dreams. And these, the dreams, writhed in and about, taking hue from the rooms and causing the wild music of the orchestra to seem as the echo of their steps.
What you just heard was a portion from a story that I love very much by Edgar Allan Poe called Mask of the Red Death. And as I said earlier, my approach towards Halloween has always been more artistic because I'm a writer. And I enjoy crafting stories and creating scenarios. A few years after I had initially been introduced to Halloween as a grown-up, I thought to myself, you know, I'd love to throw a celebration. I didn't want it to be a party in a traditional sense. I wanted it to be an elegant affair that celebrated the mystery of the night, the moon, the stars, sort of play with the idea that we could wear a mask and it could either disguise us or it could reveal who we are. I would spend 10 months, starting in early January, leading up to October 31st, planning this event. And then I would invite as many of my friends as I could, bring them in, and I would set up scenes and games for them to play, and it was detail-oriented. I wrote the party, essentially. It was a story for me.
So like a script?
Very scripted, exactly. I wanted to, in a sense, be the man behind the curtain, watching everything unfold, an artistic vision. And I planned on what would elicit certain emotions. I had themes each year. Maybe they were relevant to something that was happening. For example, in 2013, I am a bit of a superstitious person, and the number 13 has always been a superstitious number for me. So the theme for that year was superstition. It sort of gave me the opportunity to really dig into many people's various superstitions and then feature those at the party. And there was as much detail for people who were looking for it as they could possibly want. And then some people came just to be free and be themselves and escape the grind. The portion from Mask of the Red Death that we just heard, that sort of perfectly encapsulates my sensibility in terms of planning an event. There are words that describe visions glowing with barbaric luster, having a keen eye for colors and effects. All of those things mean something to me, things that inflame the senses and bring out an almost primal response in people.
If you're just tuning in, this is Outsources. I'm your host, Karen Rayforth, and my guest is Marlon Reese. So your themes, give some examples for our listeners.
So in 2009, I had an event that was vampire-themed. And in preparation for that, I wrote a story about a vampire. And the space in which I hosted the event, I set up as the vampire's home. And I left clues for people to discover how this man had become a vampire. And the idea was that guests would receive part of the story before coming to the event. And then the party itself would complete the story. It gave people more of an excuse to come out. It hopefully excited their curiosity. In 2010, I had a party that was sort of thematically based on a war between various monsters. And so I had the opportunity to write a story explaining how vampires and witches and werewolves might have become enemies of one another. And again, it was the guests received part of the story before, came to the event, and then were able to complete it in their mind in the way that they were most interested or most inspired to. I think 2014, I did one based on nightmares and dreams. I love the dream world.
It sounds kind of simple, but you've always start with your invitation that is very evocative of lots to come, and starting a story, whatever the theme is going to be. And then when somebody is there, there's a very incredibly elaborate scene in which you enter almost as if you're an actor on a stage, and you're seen, but you're part of, and you use lights and color and sound and taste and texture, mannequins, and all kinds of other real life, like a real car that's wrecked, things like that, to make everything feel like you're part of the story. It's like the news in which you're in it, not necessarily just sitting in an audience.
And you hit on one of my main intentions with each event, which has always been to give guests the sense that they will be part of the story. They're entering in as characters, perhaps in a play or a masquerade. It's been exciting for me over the years to see people really take hold of the theme, come dressed up, sort of playing off of whatever I've given them. So then I can take a step back at the events and I can look and I can say, we don't just have what I set up. We don't just have the scenes. Now we have living, breathing people who are here and they've become part of this event. So it almost adds an element of realness to it.
Which is kind of like the Halloween piece of exciting, interesting, and just a little scary.
Exactly. As Halloween should be, I think.
What are some of your thoughts about how did Halloween get connected into the LGBTQ community?
For me, I think when I was a child, before I had come out, and I'm sure many in our community became very adept at hiding that part of their personality or their identity. Identity, I think, is a better word. And it might not have been even the main piece of their identity, what they wanted to be known as, but they became skilled at concealing it. And so in a sense, those of us in the community have grown up perhaps wearing masks. There's a certain sadness in having to wear a mask, not being able to be yourself. For me, I was frightened of coming out, but I also found something a little bit oddly appealing in the mystery that I had a secret, that there was something people didn't know about me. And so now when I look at my love of Halloween and I look at the LGBTQ community's embrace of Halloween, I think that there is something on a very fundamental level that connects the idea of having hidden and then having a day during the year when everyone is hiding or everyone is given permission to wear a mask. And in some cases, for example, in mine, I actually feel like I'm taking my mask off at Halloween. I get to be more myself. It's not something that as I was growing up, that the moral majority might have disapproved of. It's something everybody gets into. And so when I consider the ramifications for the LGBTQ community during Halloween and what it means to them, it perhaps resonates on a deeper level, in the sense that we understand having hidden and having disguised ourselves, and we're not afraid of it because we've done it.
To take on and off that costume, and what sometimes straight people don't understand is how coming out once is not what happens. It's over and over and over. So you're taking a mask off, on and off, on and off. Sometimes not on at all, but off, off, off. Sometimes for any new people.
Exactly.
So we're guising or not guising.
To this day, that's still something that unnerves me, I think, each time I have to come out, because I would like to not have to. It would be nice to not have to go that extra step. And what's also interesting, I think, is, you know, having officially come out now and having a lot of people know, the sense of mystery, that secret that I had for a long time, has also changed the nature of it. So now it almost becomes more of a chore, whereas the first time it was truly, you know, a big reveal. It was truly, mm-hmm. All right, I'm taking my mask off. This is who I am. Now it's a formality almost.
Well, in probably some situations for you now, you're known with a famous partner, so you're outed in that way.
Exactly.
And there's a whole body of alleged information about you around that. And then there's who are you really?
Absolutely.
That is maybe the reveal now, rather, and that's more the Halloween side of you.
So true. That was one of the reasons that I was so excited to be invited tonight to speak with you, because this is this truly is what excites me and what I'm enthusiastic about. I consider myself an artistic individual, not necessarily a political individual, even though, of course, like everybody, I have political positions. But what I'd like to be known for is an artist, a writer, a lover of Halloween, someone who helps people to sort of bring out their inner child and enjoy something that for a long time has been considered just the domain of kids.
And lets you, as Halloween does for all of us, express different parts of who we are beyond our assigned roles or societal expectations, or everyone gets to frolic around in different identities momentarily.
They do. It's as I said earlier, it's just a great big permission slip for the evening, if you're willing to take it, to be frivolous, to be perhaps even a bit decadent. That's another guiding principle for me, is to give people that I'm celebrating with the opportunity to truly celebrate and to not worry and to not be judged as irresponsible or going overboard in some way. Because we all know the rest of the year, 364 days, we're on the spot and people are watching us and we're performing our roles and keeping our jobs and showing up with a smile on our faces. And there's a beauty to the night. I'm a much more a night owl than I am a day person. And I like the mysteries that surround the night, the fact that you can't necessarily see everything. Your mind has to kind of fill in the blank.
Let's listen to Marianne Faithfull giving us a last word from Edgar Allan Poe.
From childhood's hour, I have not been as others were. I have not seen as others saw. I could not bring my passions from a common spring. From the same source, I have not taken my sorrow. I could not awaken my heart to joy at the same tone. And all I loved alone. Then, in my childhood, in the dawn of a most stormy night, was drawn from every depth of good and evil the mystery which binds me still. From the torrent or the fountain, from the red cliff of the mountain, from the sun that round me rolled in its autumn tint of gold, from the lightning in the sky as it passed me flying by, from the thunder and the storm and the cloud that took the form when the rest of heaven was blue.
This poem, I think, is particularly relevant because it describes the experience of growing up and experiencing things in a way that is different than many of the people around you. There are lines here that describe, I couldn't bring my joy from a common spring. Thing all I loved alone. These are ideas that speak to the concept of being other, and also the beauty, though, in being able to have that different perspective on things, and looking out into the world and seeing a mystery, and then trying to understand it, trying to understand why it appeals to you, even if there might be a bit of a dark side to it also. This kind of goes back, I think, also to the LGBTQ community's experience of Halloween. Definitely has been a guiding piece of literature for me in the way that I perceive Halloween as a very romantic holiday.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.